This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
And to me, like I know that I was never naturally a great sleeper, but I believe that many people are not born great sleepers. It's a learned skill. And I believe that many people have the ability to really elevate their sleep level. They just have to know how to do it. You know, so for me, that was something that was really transformational. And, you know, looking around the world now, knowing between insomnia and apnea and, you know, all the others, and sometimes it's a homegrown problem. Sometimes it's right. People just don't value sleep. They're just, you know, pushing themselves to the limit and they think they're Superman and then they crash and they're wondering, you know, why am I so irritable? Why am I exhausted? Why is my company failing when I'm working so hard?
Right.
And I think a lot of it boils down to the answer of sleep of, you know, you're not really.
Well, I think lack of sleep is more, what's the word? Deprivational, then lack of food or water. I remember when we had our kids when they were little. I mean, without sleep, you can eat and drink and whatever you need to do to nourish your body. You're a wreck. Your brain doesn't function properly. You can't think. You don't remember what you did an hour ago, let alone the night before. I mean, it's just very debilitating. That's the word I'm thinking of.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, I'm Daron Lazarus, and I'm an executive sleep consultant.
Okay, Daron, right? It's not Doron, it's Daron in your case.
Daron, I usually
people. Daron, okay, good.
Because there's a lot of ways to skin the cat.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
I know a lot of
each one of them
Darons, and they pronounce it Doron or Daron or whatever. So I guess.
Do you really know a lot of Darons?
I've met a bunch of them. I had a real estate transaction with somebody here that was, and he pronounced it Doron, D-O-R-O-N, and then yeah,
it's a very very uncommon name in America.
it's an elite club. But I appreciate you joining me. Now you're out in San Diego, right?
I'm originally from San Diego. I'm in Chicago right now, which is not quite as
10 o'clock there. It's not that early.
Right.
Okay. So today we're going to talk about, because you're a sleep consultant and a sleep specialist, and we're going to talk about, you know, because this is an entrepreneur's podcast, about all the business owners that probably get no sleep because either they're thinking about things all the time or they just can't put things down and they're worried or they're concerned. So I appreciate you finding me, right? I think you found me, connecting with me, and agreeing to come on the podcast. So this will come out like in the middle of the fall. So hopefully, so one of two things is going to be true. Either we're all locked down again because the virus got worse.
Right.
Or we're out and it passed us. So we'll flip a coin and see what happens.
Well, 50,000 cases in the U.S. yesterday. I'm not sure which side the odds are.
Yeah, and today is July 2nd. So we'll see what happens when this gets released. So, Daron, tell me your background and where you're from. Or you said originally San Diego and how you got into the sleep stuff and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. I am originally from San Diego, California. I ended up going to university in Los Angeles at UCLA and ended up studying psychology and neuroscience, was something that I was kind of very, very passionate about.
Okay.
And really my real interest in sleep was born out of my own insomnia. I was never a great sleeper as a kid and a teenager. And in my 20s, it actually got very bad to the point that I couldn't sleep without heavy sleeping pills. And, you know, I went to well-meaning doctors and psychologists and no one was really able to help me.
Because I think as kids, a lot of us have sleep problems, even looking back, but we're not all, you know, on medication and stuff. Sometimes we're just tired all the time.
Sure. And it's, I actually gave a webinar last night specifically for parents of kids that are challenging sleepers. Cause as a parent myself, you know, some kids are easy sleepers, some kids are not so easy.
Sure. And that's what affects your sleep. Cause then you're getting up for your kid. That's definitely what broke my sleep habits was when the kids were young. Mm-hmm. They're up all the time.
It can be very challenging and definitely can throw the parents off. Sometimes the parents will, you know, they're sleeping fine until they have kids and then their schedule's broken up so much with the newborn, they're never really able to get that back.
I would say that's probably me and my wife. We hear every little sound in the house now. We wake up from the lightest little things. I was a sound sleeper. You know, you couldn't wake me up.
Mitch, I don't know what's going on in your house. I don't even hear the baby anymore. Like, my wife's like, you didn't hear the baby? Oh, no, it's a survival mechanism. Yeah. I took that a long time ago.
Exactly. And you don't have to get up if you don't hear anything.
Right. You heard what? I didn't hear anything.
Right, exactly. But you're also a professional. So you trained yourself to be out, you know. I actually use, what are those? Eye shades. I wear those because we don't have the best blackout shades. And then, like, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, I start getting woken up from the light. So my wife makes fun of me, but it helps me sleep.
Right. At our tools at any disposal, investing in our sleep is an investment in our success. It's an investment in our health, in our marriage, in our family. So, you know, I mean, I'm all for people taking responsibility for their sleep. And if little things like that help, you know, why not?
New mattresses, the whole deal. They have a crazy mattress business.
Sure.
With all these crazy mattresses. Okay. So, all right. So go on. That's interesting. So now you really had so much trouble sleeping when you were a teenager that you really were seeking help.
Right. I was seeking help and there's really this gap between what I call like real in-depth sleep knowledge and the well-meaning practitioners who are oftentimes dealing on the front lines of these cases. And I felt that unfortunately no one was able to help me. And the more people you go to, the more they're not able to help, the more you get frustrated and despondent. Right. You think that I've contracted some incurable disease called insomnia and I'm never going to get over it. And this is a lifetime. And then, you know, you catastrophize and, you know, you start reading the horror stories. This guy never slept for 22 years. And
I know.
Like, oh my gosh, that's going to be me. And so that was something that was a very challenging period in my life. And the only one I kind of, you know, I remember just kind of stepping back from the whole situation and really, as opposed to running to everyone else to try to find my solution, I said, you know, you have a background in this. You can figure this out yourself, right? This is something.
Well, this was now after college, right? Because you did, obviously, when you're a teenager, have a neuroscience background. So now you're a neuroscientist. Yeah. You understand the brain and you kind of start putting things together, right?
Correct. Yeah. This is post-college. I said, Daron, you need to be able to figure this out yourself. You have to step up and take responsibility for
yourself. It's always a good thing, right? Because nobody's going to take care of you better than you do, right?
Right.
So is that one of the things that got you interested in neuroscience? Was it?
Yeah. I mean, look, I was once upon a time, I was on the pre-med track. My father was a doctor. And in my social circles growing up, you could do anything you wanted in life as long as you became a doctor or a lawyer. You know,
of course. I'm Jewish too.
You go to law school. But like, those were the two respectable professions.
The reason that I went to law school is because my bubby's dying wish lived till 101 and a half. God bless her. But she, whatever you do, I don't care what you do for a living. Just go to law school. She thought it was the best training. I don't know if I agree with that, but, you know. So, that's what happens. It's Jewish guilt.
Right. A friend of mine, his mother was in she went to a medical ethics class, and the rabbi there was discussing in the Jewish faith, when does life begin? Is it at conception? Is it at birth? Is it sometime between? She says, Rabbi, school. The question is very simple. Life begins when your son gets into medical school.
Like, right, of course.
Before that is nothing.
You know? That is classic.
That's where the game starts, you know?
Yeah. The funny thing is, so my daughter wants to be going to medicine, and not because we're pushing her or guilting or anything like that. They can do whatever they want. And my other son, he's in college now. So he was, I'm going to be a doctor, whatever. I think 3 weeks into school, he's like, this is going to be very hard. So he changed. And now he's like in computer science or informatics or something. But she may very well go on to, but she doesn't want to major in science in undergrad. A lot of these kids, she's a writer. She wants to major in English and journalism and then go to medical school, which you can do, right? So, but you study neuroscience though, undergrad, right?
Right. Undergrad. Okay. Okay. Correct. So I was actually kind of developed a passion for education. I ended up, I don't know if you know this about me, I'm an ordained rabbi, actually. I ended up
going good.
8 years of postgraduate study in Jewish studies and Jewish texts and philosophy.
Very nice.
And the sleep thing was kind of almost born out of that. I ended up writing a book in 2018 on Jewish mindfulness, which was kind of combining these two passions that I had of Judaism and Jewish philosophy,
right,
and as well as meditation and mindfulness was essentially the basis
of my
practice. And I kind of was able to fuse it to. And a lot of people don't think that there's a lot of intersection there, but there really is a lot of history and a lot of text and a lot of depth in that area that, you know, Judaism and a lot of faiths and a lot of ancient
traditions. Of course. Well, they all interact and overlap in history historically. So, yeah, I mean, you're talking about texts. Or how old is the Bible? 4,000 years old, something like that?
3,300.
Okay, close. Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm not surprised at that because, you know, sleeping and all this stuff is part of our life. We're human beings. So it's not surprising that, you know, you can find things in the Bible that any Bible, any text that's that old. So, but yeah, but look, yeah, you get passions and then you say, are these related? And you explore that. And now you're the rabbi that helps people sleep, right?
That's right.
Exactly.
The joke is that when I'm giving classes and sermons, I don't put people to sleep, but, you know, in
right,
the day
exactly,
when I'm working with people, you know.
That's good.
You don't want to cross the two
right,
talents.
Right, a rabbinical sermon that doesn't put people to sleep. That's a sales angle, right?
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. So that's good. Okay, so you were ordained, but you didn't practice. You didn't become you were a rabbi of a congregation?
I was involved with outreach work. I was a rabbi at Washington University in St. Louis.
Sure.
And I was
beautiful
also doing
school.
Some work here in Chicago. So in general, I think kind of my foundation is I'm here to help people. I want to help people grow. And I think, you know, Judaism is part of that. Sleep is part of that, you know, trying to incorporate them. And I think now we're scaling up on the sleep side of things, understanding that there are, you know, thousands of millions of Americans. It's really an epidemic what's going on in the sleep world and
you know,
something that we're trying to bring to more maximum.
Right. It's
exposure.
Not just the Jewish faith. We have enough guilt that keeps them from sleeping, but there's plenty of people that don't sleep.
Correct.
Yeah.
We might be leading the pack, but no,
probably
across ethnicities.
Absolutely. Yeah, we should get an award for that. Okay, so take me along the journey. So you started learning about all this stuff.
Right. So I was, I was in rabbinical school at the time, not sleeping well, really started doing a lot of research and realized that, like, I think for a lot of people, sleep, it's not a lack of information. It's a paradigm shift. I think people just almost view their lack of sleep as inherently like a medical issue that needs a medical solution.
Right.
And sometimes it's actually pulling you the opposite direction. Sometimes the more that you're kind of bought into the fact that you have a disease, the more you carry with you a diagnosis, the more you kind of think that this is something that needs to be medically treated,
right,
actually less prone you are to be a successful sleeper. And the first stage of my development, and certainly something that I work with a lot of people on, is really to get out of that mindset of like, no, I'm not an insomniac. I don't have chronic insomnia. This is not an incurable disease. I actually can sleep fine. I just have to be able to figure out how to tap into my sleep cycle to be able to do that. So that was kind of part of my development. And you know, if you've been told it enough, if you're on enough medication, it's a very hard thing to break. It's a mindset that you have to try to get out of. So for me, that was something that was kind of the first stage in development. And then, you know, it's a lot of techniques, a lot of exercises, definitely incorporating the idea of meditation, of mindfulness, which was, you know, a young man growing up in the 90s, these weren't household terms. This was not cool. There was no meditation right. rooms in corporate America, you know, no. back in the 90s when I was growing up.
Right. And so, we were all disconnected anyway. So the internet didn't come around to what, 92 maybe? So it was just getting started.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this was, we definitely were, when this was going on for me, it was not as hyper connected as the world is today.
Right.
So, you know, I started just incorporating a lot of those principles, and within a very short amount of time, I was able to turn myself around. And I was
and like, got off like of this, medication and everything.
Totally off of medication. And within a month or two, I was sleeping totally fine. And to the point now that I can fall asleep within 30 seconds of my head hitting the pillow, sleep the whole night. And even if I get woken up three or four times, as we got little kids, sometimes happens, right back to sleep. Right. And to me, like I know that I was never naturally a great sleeper, but I believe that many people are not born great sleepers. It's a learned skill. And I believe that many people have the ability to really elevate their sleep level. They just have to know how to do it. You know, so for me, that was something that was really transformational. And, you know, looking around the world now, knowing between insomnia and apnea and, you know, all the other issues, and sometimes it's a homegrown problem. Sometimes it's right. people just don't value sleep. They're just, you know, pushing themselves to the limit, and they think they're Superman, and then they crash, and they're wondering, you know, why am I so irritable? Why am I exhausted? Why is my company failing when I'm working so hard?
Right.
And I think a lot of it boils down to the answer of sleep of, you know, you're not really.
Well, I think lack of sleep is more, what's the word, deprivational, then lack of food or water. I remember when we had our kids when they were little, I mean, without sleep, you can eat and drink and whatever you need to do to nourish your body. You're a wreck. Your brain doesn't function properly. You can't think. You don't remember what you did an hour ago, let alone the night before. You know, we used to have to make lists of our kids, like did they pee and poop, because you couldn't remember. Somebody taught us that very early on. You better make a chart because you're not going to remember. You know, when you're fighting about things in the middle of the night, you don't even remember what you're fighting about. I mean, it's just very debilitating. That's the word I'm thinking of. Very debilitating. And it's good to know that you've discovered that it is a problem that can be solved. It is a learned skill. It's not something we're like born with. Like if you're a bad sleeper, that's just something you got to accept. You know, it's a look at the sleep industry. It's a crazy business with foam mat. We just got a new mattress, foam, hybrid, latex, this, that, hot sleeper, side sleeper, arm sleeper, overhead sleeper. Not only that, I'm getting emails from every mattress company in the country now, but yeah.
They saw you were Googling for it. They know who you are.
Oh, the worst. And we bought one. Like, we have a new mattress. We were like 20 years from getting a mattress. But yeah, now my wife's like, I don't know if I can sleep on this mattress. I said, well, that's because you slept on a crappy mattress for 20 years. Now you have a good, you got to get used to it. But okay, so then, and by the way, I know this is on the mic, but I have a study group, a networking group. And we want you to come and as a guest speaker one Great. Morning. You don't have awesome. To fly in. You can do it on Zoom. So we all meet on Zoom.
Not
so
that we'll, you'd let me in if I did fly in.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Good point. I have to quarantine you for 2 weeks. Exactly. But yeah, so they're very interested in hearing from you. But okay, so you took care of yourself. So then, I mean, what do? You wake up one morning and go, I'm going to be a sleep specialist? I mean,
so it was something that was really, you know, It started out just word of mouth, right? Just speaking to people and like, oh yeah, you know, I have the sleep issue. I'm like, oh, you know, I also have a sleep issue. Maybe I can help. I never really thought of it of kind of a business model.
Right,
It was something that I was just, you know, kind of helping out some people on the side, and, you know, word gets around and I was able to help some people.
I would think you meet 10 people, 8 of them have sleep problems.
Right.
Everyone's so having today. Sleep problems. Yeah.
Right. I mean, 1 in 3 Americans today will use some form of sleep aid or sleep medication.
Right. They have apnea, throughout the year. CPAP, whatever. Yeah.
Right. I mean, even aside from apnea, I mean, apnea is really an epidemic in America.
Right. And it's dangerous, right? I mean, you can have a heart attack if you're, right?
Right. Yeah. So that's something that we're actually starting to see a lot more. We're starting to work with people a lot more. There is a big school of thought that, you know, a rising school of thought, I would say, that if you're able to control your breathing and you're able to totally shift the way that your lung capacity works and your breathing mechanism works and your posture works, you're actually able to really improve what goes on at night as well. And it's always about that daytime shift. It's never about the night. It's about shifting your whole lifestyle and your whole mindset that then the product of night is going to be much more successful.
Sure. So night, you're subconscious and you're not conscious.
Right.
But that's basically what a CPAP does. It forces the air into you, right? Because you don't have the posture or whatever you're doing. And it's got to be disruptive. I can't imagine sleeping with like a gas mask on your face. I mean, That can't be not, that has to be disruptive to your sleep. I don't know. Maybe people are such bad sleepers that even doing that is better than, right?
Right. And that's the reality. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's a very dangerous thing if you're not getting oxygen at night, you know, it puts your body in tremendous stress. But you're right. I mean, there is a very high non-compliance rate with the devices that, you know, again, well-meaning doctors are prescribing, because these really are, you know, life-saving devices to be able to give your body the oxygen. But the reality is that they're so uncomfortable. Sometimes they're so intrusive that people are just not going to do them. Right.
And right. Right.
Now in like a, again, that gap between the information and the technology and people's actual, you know, procedure, like how many people are going to do that. And even if people do that, right. I spoke to somebody a couple of days ago. He, you know, he was doing that and he couldn't, and then he couldn't sleep, and then he developed insomnia. And then the doctor put him on very heavy sleeping medication to be able to tolerate the CPAP machine. And then he's like, no, this is crazy. I don't want the CPAP machine. Then he had to get off the medication. Again, there's a lot of complex layers.
Why don't you just take what is that medication that killed Michael Jackson? Why don't you just knock yourself out and then you just wake up in the morning when you're ready? I mean, you know, you might not wake up.
Right, right. Yeah, no.
But so that guy ends up in like a spiral.
Right.
You know?
Right. So he came to me, right, and said he's not on the CPAP machine. He can't handle the CPAP machine, but he's off the medication. So he can sleep fine, but now he's back to, you know, snoring and you're waking his family up, knocking the right amount of oxygen. And that's, you know, it works. You can start working together. So
right, which then affects your spouse. So now your spouse isn't sleeping. Like I wear a mouth guard because I have TMJ and it's not so bad. Like it goes away, but there's no other way to do it except stop grinding your teeth. So, but that makes me snore. Mm-hmm. Then my wife's like, she'll wake up, she'll kick me. I don't know what she does in his life. I have these weird dreams, like somebody's beating me up, you know? Or I wake up.
I wonder why, you know?
Right, exactly. So that's disruptive too. It's not like we sleep like Ricky Ricardo and Ricky and Lucy and we're in separate beds. Well, even then you'd snore. They would hear you, you know, in the same room.
From a marriage therapist point of view, up to 30% of couples that go in for marriage therapy have sleep, the snoring, the waking each other up as an issue. In fact, a lot of a BBC reported that a lot of American bedrooms now, American houses that are being built, right, actually have two master bedrooms, you know, him and hers. And, you know, they can share a bathroom in the middle. But, people want their, because it's a real issue. I mean, if you're chronically exhausted because your spouse is, you know, snoring at, you know, 35 decibel, like an airline jet,
you know. Yeah, and you're fighting. Like I told you, like with the kids, you're fighting over things that you don't, by the way, you know, the PC thing, you can't say master bedroom anymore. They're getting rid of that because that apparently comes from slavery days when the master would live. Yeah, seriously.
I thought it was the parents being the master over the kids.
I didn't think of it that way, but that's apparently the derivation of it was why they call it the master's quarters. It's going to be like the primary bedroom in the sex. So then who's gets the primary bedroom? Does the husband get the primary bedroom? Is that sexist? And then the wife gets the second bedroom.
Mitch, I think you know the answer to that question. who gets the
right,
primary
whatever
bedroom?
She says.
Right.
Exactly. All right, so this is good. But and maybe I'm jumping ahead, but a lot of people take things like melatonin, you know, like natural things. Are those helpful or is it just all psychological?
There is a placebo effect, right? And placebo effects sometimes work. Right? There's no problem with a placebo effect. You can take a sugar pill too for the placebo effect.
Yeah, as long as you don't know it.
Melatonin is a naturally occurring chemical in your body. So it's definitely, you know, if someone's having sleeping issues and they're on melatonin, it's definitely a lighter drug than some of the heavier medication. And it's definitely safer to use, you know, than obviously sleeping pills. And it does give your body more natural sleep. So there are advantages. If someone would say like, you know, should I be on, you know, 10 milligrams of Ambien or melatonin, either of them work, I would definitely go for the melatonin. That being said, I definitely would not run to melatonin unless you've really tried everything else first.
Okay, good.
And even once you're on melatonin, sometimes I'll just basically wean people off of it because, you know, essentially for most people, their body is able to produce that if it's set in the right environment, right? To be able to get in the habit. And obviously if you're artificially, you know, inserting it in your body is not going to be producing the normal levels because it knows that this outside source is going to be there.
Yeah, now you're screwing up your natural.
Right.
Right. So it's not,
you know, again, not the worst thing, but, you know, certainly something that, you know, I never like to make our sleep dependent on anything outside of ourselves.
That makes sense.
I believe that, you know, sleep should be born within. And if you learn the internal skills, again, it's fine to have those aids temporarily, but really we try to work with people to get full.
Well, I mean, if you're a melatonin, if you're a supplements company, you want everybody to think that melatonin is the best thing since sliced bread, you know?
Right. Right. Right now they make even like melatonin gummies for the kids. Do they?
We're so over-medicated. It's ridiculous. Right. Okay. So keep going.
Right. So that was, you know, certainly something that I think now, you know, we're really trying to scale it up. I think certainly in the COVID crisis and the riot crisis and everything else that's, you know, going on in the world and especially America, people are having an even a harder time sleeping. Kids, adults, the stress. Oh, I know.
People's stress levels are staying at home with their kids. Right. I can't imagine the stress levels people are in. There's going to be a lot of therapy going on. But it's going on now, I'm sure. But post-COVID, you know.
Right, right. Look, I mean, there's, you know, the economy is not crashing, hopefully. It's just shifting, you know. Like, if you're selling toilet paper or face masks or you're a therapist, you're like, good. This is booming business.
Right,
you know,
of course.
This is your it's time, you
shifting
know?
The money around.
Sure.
Yeah, right. But of course, if we keep printing money, though, we're devaluing our currency. But let's not make people too nervous out there.
Right. Definitely not. They won't sleep well tonight. But, you know, certainly I think especially the executives that are running the companies that have all taken a hit, all taken a pivot under a lot of stress right now. And a lot of people are counting on them. You know, they might have hundreds, if not thousands of employees. Essentially, you know, the American economy is on these people's shoulders. They're under tremendous stress. And, you know, that coupled with the home and everything else that's going on. So that's kind of what I'm focusing on now is really kind of, you know, helping those executives. And then obviously it's a trickle down, you know, we can run, you know, corporate retreats and you know, corporate classes to be able to help their employees because if the reality is that if their employees are not sleeping well, their company is taking a huge hit. I mean, the American economy last year in 2019, the sleep issues that affected employees cost the American economy $411 billion.
Oh, it's got to be a lot higher this year.
The COVID and self-crisis, you know, that's, you know, trumping everything worried. In terms of the, in terms of the economic
effect. Statistic.
But it's worth employers thinking about how to invest in the sleep health of their employees.
Right.
They're gonna be more productive, more focused, happier, healthier, you know, everything you want. But, you know, because these sleep issues are so chronic, it's really taking a hit across the board. So it's something that has to be invested in the top and really, you know, I believe be implemented all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, because when we first met, I said to you, well, you know, do you think that the accidental entrepreneur is the place for you to come out and talk about sleep? And that's when you told me, well, actually, my focus is right now on business owners and, you know, people that employees rely on, small business owners, bigger business owners. And yeah, I mean, look, I'm a solo practitioner now. I used to have a bigger firm with employees and so forth, but I can't imagine. I have clients that own restaurants. They've had to lay off people. They were getting ready to bring them back. Now in New Jersey, the governor just said, you know what? It's not going well. We're not going inside. So then they had to tell them, you can't come back. You know, there's less shifts available and things like that. So I can't imagine what it's doing to business owners' sleep cycles because they don't know when this is going to change or how it's going to change. Or I think the news really is bad for sleep. I think you should go on a news fast when you're trying to, you know, with all the other things you're doing with and that you recommend and that you train people on. Also, not knowing all the crap that's going on in the world is probably a good thing, too, because it's so skewed, you know, because the news wants to, their business, too, right? They want to get you to watch.
Right. Right. Yeah. I actually spoke to a group last night specifically about children. We spoke about children's nightmares. And oftentimes, especially that, if the kids are, you know, they're seeing the news or even the parents' discussions about the riots, about the disease, about, you know, all these things, and sometimes they're experiencing firsthand, they're having family members that are getting sick and dying, you know, that's having a real effect on them. And granted, you know, children are even maybe more sensitive, but us as well. And I think that's, you know, sometimes I think we're, so to say, relieving that anxiety by gathering more information, by knowing the exact COVID-19 statistics of every state in the union for the last seven weeks. Right. But in reality, we're not helping the situation at all. We need to be strong. We need to be stable. We need to be resilient. And sometimes, like you're saying, that means being able to shut that technology off, being able to access the news that is going to help us move through the crisis and not just, you know, kind of, you know, paralyze us, right, in a state of fear of the unknown. And that's something that, you know, definitely all of these things, sleep is really the outcome of a full day's, you know, mental and physical activity. And, you know, certainly it does take its toll, you know.
Yeah, no, it's the most important thing we have to do on a daily basis. So, and I'm sure the kids, you know, they internalize things differently than we do because they're younger and they haven't had life experience and they're not mature. And I'm sure that affects their sleep differently because then they go to bed worrying about things they don't even realize they're worrying about, you know, and they're having weird dreams about stuff that is not going to happen, but, you know, about all the things that are happening in society. And then they're having a dream that their parents died and they were all alone. I don't know, crazy stuff. Because your mind does that. Like it does weird things to you. So So how do you, even from a business standpoint, how you've been growing your business, meeting people, what have you been doing? You do mostly seminars, one-on-one coaching, you know, what's the whole process? And then we'll get into advice and things like that.
Sure. So look, I think we're still in growth mode. You know, we're doing a lot of recruiting on LinkedIn. I've met a lot of people on LinkedIn and, right, you know, starting conversations like that. And because it is something that has a very high prevalence, you know, we're getting a lot of people talking.
Yeah, kind of easy to find prospects, right?
Right. Yeah, we are coming on amazing podcasts like this.
Yeah, right. Let's help you grow my listener base.
We're getting our word out. you know, we actually just started doing webinars last night. Was our first webinar.
Okay.
And then, you know, we're working on the email list. So, you know, full systems go. You know, we're collaborating with different partners. Sometimes you have like executive coaches that are more dealing with kind of the business side of things, but we're kind of, you know, creating some partners that, hey, like, you know, if you want that CEO not only to, you know, be producing top profit, you want him to be able to get a sleep well. So let's work together to be able to,
yeah,
big, you know, to big, help
big,
that happen.
Big obstacle to being effective. No question about it.
Sure.
Yeah. I think if the person is exhausted, I don't care what the coach is doing. It's just bouncing off his head. Is that,
right,
you know, so that's, yeah. I mean, that's gotta be more than half of it. Sleeping well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. When we sleep well, every challenge that comes our way is tolerable, right? We can get through it. We can get past it. If you're exhausted, you have the littlest thing go wrong. You know, kids spills Cheerios over the floor.
It's
a catastrophe, right? You just, you know, start crying right there on the spot. And therefore, you know, sleep is such an important ingredient. And unfortunately, because of our, you know, the culture, there was kind of this myth in the 90s that like sleep is for wimps, you know, like real men tough it out.
Real,
you know,
tough guys.
A lot on both sides. And I think now, as the evidence is coming out and the reality is coming out, successful entrepreneurs and business people are not people that work hard. They're people that work smart. And I think especially now we're seeing to being able to prioritize, being able to delegate, being able to outsource, that you don't need to be the one that's putting in 110 hours a week. And chances are, if you are, you're probably
collapse
doing a disservice.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I spoke to a young man a few weeks ago. He was like, you know, he's been working 110 hours a week for the last decade. Right. And he calls me because like, I'm exhausted. I can't figure out why. I'm like, for us, it's like comical. Like, what do you mean? But he's been so sunk into that world. He was living that narrative that, you know, he believed that the harder you work, the more successful you're going to be. Right. And it really kind of took a paradigm shift for him to come out of that and be like, you know, I do want to succeed in my business, but, you know, on 4 hours of sleep, you know, repetitively for 10 years, I'm not going to be able to accomplish which I need to accomplish. There are savants. There are individuals that are, you know, kind of crazy productive on very little sleep.
Right. But I still don't think it's healthy for them.
Which side you're on.
Right.
My chances are you need more sleep than you're actually getting.
Yeah. Well, it's the tech entrepreneur, you know, well, we started this business. We stayed up for 4 days programming and everything.
Right.
And you could ask, well, what happened after 4 days? Well, we collapsed and we slept for the next four, you know?
Sure.
I mean, I think I'm guilty of it too. I feel sometimes guilty if I'm not working hard enough or I'm coming home earlier or whatever, but sometimes you got to take a step back. I mean, look, now I'm 53, so I can actually have a perspective on life and say, you know, I want to make it to 63. So, you know, but I think that a lot of people, like you said, they get so caught up with what they're doing and they think that, not like sleep is not the most, it probably is the most important thing, because you don't have to eat every day. I mean, we fast on Yom Kippur.
There you go.
We don't die. And, you know, so there's all kinds of religions that have fasting and things like that. And, you know, maybe people go on a cleanse, they just drink water for a couple of days, but if they didn't sleep for 3 days, they would lose your mind. I mean, you really can't. And you know what? I noticed this, and I'm sure, you know, sometimes you have a problem, right? And the night before you can't solve it. And the smarter people go, you know what? I'm just going to put it aside for the night. And you get a good night's sleep and you wake up in the morning. And you know what? Lo and behold, it was right there in front of you.
Right.
Seriously. You know, it's like when you read things. So I write articles. I write, well, more contracts. I never write the contract, send it out to the client. I got to look at it for a couple of days. I come back and I'm like, how did that word get in that? That was not there the last time I read it. Because when your mind is tired, it starts doing things like surviving. So it makes things look right so that like it can move on to other things. I think that's what your mind does. And, you know, so, and sleep is such a huge part of what I do to be effective for a client. And I think that permeates, you know, business 100%. Anybody listening out there, get some sleep.
Yeah. I think there's also a myth, like, you should never go to bed with matters unresolved. You know, you should always, you know, figure out that dispute
it's
with your
probably
spouse
the opposite.
Or whatever, you know, like before you go to bed.
Yeah. Don't go to bed mad at your spouse, right? That's a huge
go
Jewish
to bed,
thing.
Right? You'll find that it's much easier to figure out tomorrow morning. You don't even remember what you were fighting about. You're like,
right.
Well, that it was fine. After a good
I don't even remember. Don't worry about it, honey. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what your rabbi tells you. Don't ever go to bed with, you know, mad at each other.
Right.
It's okay.
That's not the advice I give. You know.
Maybe, right. Well, maybe you're just tired, right?
A lot better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Well, this is a good discussion because I think that a lot of people it resonates with a lot of people. Like, yeah, you're right. I'm just really tired. I told you I've been through a couple of sleep studies, probably because my wife says I snore and she wants to solve that. And I've had deviated septum and I've had some, my uvula's been removed. We're not on video here, but yeah, it's gone. I still kind of snore, but I remember I went through these sleep studies, which, by the way, is a horrific experience. You don't sleep because they got you hooked up to every electrode. They come in, they move the stuff. So you think you're like getting a nice sleep, but you don't. And then their conclusion was, I was like, well, do I have apnea? No, you don't have apnea. Well, what do I need to do? Well, you need to sleep more. Thank you. Like that's all they told me.
You need to sleep more and that would cure.
Yeah, they said I wasn't
snoring?
Sleeping enough. That's why I'm tired. Really? I needed to go to your center and lose a whole night's sleep to find that out? I know that's the case. So what do I do? Oh, well, you can take melatonin. They didn't have much advice. They didn't. There's just a center that studies sleep. They don't help you solve the problems.
Sure. And look, I think it's a pro and con of Western medicine. Western medicine is phenomenally technologically advanced. They know how to, you know, diagnose. I mean, you know, January 1st this year, I had a strep infection in my chest, right? Ended up going to the ER. They were able to catch it, MRI, surgery, you know, four days, you know.
Yeah, we're very good when you're sick. We're very good.
Right, right. Phenomenal. And certainly, you know, for a lot of things, Western medicine is super advanced in the technological, you know, things that are coming out all the time. My father's doctor, I have the greatest amount of respect for medical professionals. But sleep oftentimes is something that just Western medicine is not designed well to deal with.
Right.
It's something that's very personal. It's very individualistic. You need to have time to really get to know the people, to get people to open up, to allow people to be vulnerable, right? And that in a 15-minute, you know, medical management system, that's just not the way
they're not equipped for that.
Really,
yeah.
Designed, right.
It was my GP that sent me to the sleep thing.
Right.
So I said, well, what happened? Well, they said you don't have apnea. He didn't know what else to do after that.
Right.
They didn't diagnose me with a condition. So how could he treat it?
Sure. Right.
Unlike Eastern medicine.
You know, if we can't bill insurance under a certain code.
Right. Exactly. There's no CPT code for that. So exactly. Well, learning disabilities are kind of like that too, right? I think when we were young, maybe 20 years ago, 30, 40 years ago, they'd be like, oh, he's a little slower, you know, just work harder, or study more.
Discipline him more.
Yeah.
If you suspend him, he'll do better in school.
Right. But he had an issue that could be addressed, but since there was no diagnosis for it, they don't treat it. But I guess that's, you know, the way we go. But look, we're living now in a world where you can help people and we have consciousness of thought where we're like, hey, you know, maybe that makes sense. So it's good what you're doing, getting around and talking to people. So when did you start really doing this as a formal business beyond just like, sure, I'll help you, you know, type of thing?
So about 2.5 years ago, we attempted to scale up. I believe the scale up was not successful. And then really I moved here to Chicago, got busy with some other things. And about 6 months ago, we kind of took it in its newest edition to really kind of, you know, hit the ground running.
Well, it's probably good timing because I think during this whole crisis, people are really evaluating a lot of things and that their health and wellness is a huge part of that because they realize, you know what? I don't want to go to work every day until my fingers bleed and work. I can work at home 3 days and have a better quality of life. And, you know, it's like other countries where they work to live and we kind of live to work.
Sure.
You know?
Right. No, I've lived in a Mediterranean country. I lived in Israel for 7 years. And I think
they have siesta in the afternoon, right?
Right, right. The mindset. I mean, you go out in the town at 8 and then 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night on a weekday. And not only do you see adults out there drinking and enjoying themselves and they're not having a good time, you see little kids. You're like, wait a second, you got school tomorrow morning, kid. Like, it's 10 o'clock at night. What are you doing out here? You're 6 years old. And the parents are chilled and the kids are chilled. It's just a whole different mindset. Like in America, you're like, oh no, you got to get Johnny to bed at 7 o'clock.
Right. And most other countries, all of Europe is like that. you know, because it's like you said, it's the mindset about, it's the journey of life. It's not getting there. You know, it's not the end result. But we're so driven to, I mean, look, I'm guilty of it too. It's a school night. You make sure you get your work done. Don't get some sleep. My kids are pretty good sleepers. They're dead to the world. I don't know why, but probably because we got them in habits when they were little about, you know, you go to bed at 6:30 at night or 7 o'clock at night or whatever. Our kids weren't the kind of kids that were like, you know, you get these parents that are like, well, I don't know. He doesn't want to go to sleep. So we let him stay up till 10. I don't think that's good. He's three.
Right.
You know, his brain is developing. So, you know, so a lot of that is just, you know, my wife was always very tough with the kids and, you know, you have to, and I think that they're very well functioning because of it. They hit the pillow. I'll go to close the light and they're out. They're just very good sleepers. I hope that continues. Like you said, life disrupts those things, right? I mean, you could be a good sleeper as a teenager, as a little kid, and life experiences just kind of clobber you over the head and you start worrying about things and you start worrying about other things and the kids. And yeah, it's very disruptive. So that's got to be a challenge, right? In our life as we grow as human beings. When you're young, everyone else is paying your bills. So you're like, okay, right? Even if you're paying your bills, you don't have many bills. So,
right.
You know,
certainly it's, you know, look, my whole approach to kids, especially is to really, you want to be able to create those boundaries. Obviously the kid can, you know, just stay up watching movies all night. You know, it's not helping
anybody.
Unhealthy.
Yeah.
But you really, as opposed to thinking just in the micro, like I want to get, you know, little Dennis asleep right now, to really kind of have that paradigm shift and think, I want to teach my kid to have solid sleep skills for life.
Right.
And I want to empower them that they should understand, like, it's not that battle point of, you know, you better get into bed or you're going to be grounded. You know,
no.
You actually say, like, we assume that kids understand all about sleep and they know as much as we do or know as much as we would.
Yeah. Like they me, I know very little. So,
right. Kids don't know why they sleep. They don't know the importance of sleep. They don't know good sleep hygiene. And if you assume that, like, oh, they're just going to pick this up in life, you very well might have them calling me in 15 or 20 years, like, oh, they're on. Yeah. I can't. Lo and behold, they were never taught sleep skills as a kid.
They
learned those techniques in order for them to be able to value sleep, right? And those are the kind of people that crash. And when they do get into issues, like you were saying, sometimes they just don't have the wherewithal to be able to weather that storm. And certainly, you know, I think COVID and quarantine are definitely one of those examples where a lot of people's sleep are thrown off and they're really, you know, not clear how to get that back.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, because if we develop our kids and we teach them skills, I mean, this is like a whole generation, right? So you got a lot of work ahead of you for the next 20 or 30 years. But if eventually the kids have skills, because you and I both know they're going to have obstacles in life. They're going to have kids. They're going to have kids with challenges. They're going to have all kinds of reasons in their life with business struggles and things that are going to disrupt sleeping. And if they have the skills and the tools to deal with those things, you know, I think they're gonna fare much, much better. And if they know that, hey, once your skills aren't working, maybe there's professionals who can help you get through it. You know, I think that's one of the, it's not, I don't know if it's an epiphany or whatever. When you're an entrepreneur and you're a business owner, if you get to the point where you understand that failing's okay and that it will happen, just like your sleep's gonna be disrupted at some point, you're going to be tired. So then the question is, how do you recover from that? Or how do you make it better? Because look, we're human beings, right? One of the things that makes us unique is that we think. We're thinking beings. We solve problems. We think about stuff. So what comes with that is worry, especially if you're Jewish. But it comes with that a lot of worry and a lot of thoughts. And our mind plays tricks on us. And so I think that developing those kind of skills equips you when you run into the problems. It doesn't help you avoid the problems. It helps you deal with them along the way. And that's true for in business. If you just say, okay, I'm going to fail. You know, if you take a risk to get out there and you worry about things and you're a person that loves people and has children and tries to have a business, you're going to have problems sleeping. I mean, I'm sorry. I hate to tell people that. They're going to have problems. But learning the skills from someone like you allows them to deal with them better. That's what it does.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing.
Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show. You don't get rid of people's sleep problems. You help them solve their sleep problems. They'll have it again, probably. They'll fall off the wagon at some point. But if you have, they have the tools from you, then they can jump right back into line, so to speak.
Right, right. An excellent point. You know, it's kind of recalling the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
That, you know, in the rich dad mentality, the greatest lessons we can have, the most valuable things are actually our failures, right? That's where we learn the most.
Always I remember the
there
greatest.
Was a story yeah. that came out of one of the Fortune 500 companies. One of the employees, he made a financial blunder and some big mistake, and he lost the company $12 million.
Oh.
Right? So, okay, a natural thing, right?
Hopefully
so
it's a big company. $12 million.
Hopefully they can survive this before yeah. COVID. Right. And the CEO obviously, you know, calls him in the next day, you know, so the employee walks in and he says, I assume you're giving me the pink slip.
You're going to fire me, of course. Well, you know, I can't give you the $12 million back. So,
right, right. So the employer says, he says, what do you mean? I just invested $12 million on your education. Why would I fire you now?
Right. You'll right? never and, make and that it, mistake.
Right, again. Never make mistake, and you'll prevent the whole company from ever making that mistake again. You yeah. know, so I think certainly that's a very healthy mentality, understanding that we will have challenges, we will have failures. But I certainly from my own life, and I think for many others, if we're able to learn from those experiences, grow from those experiences, sometimes only when our sleep gets thrown off do we really have to dig in deep and really figure out how does sleep work and how does our own, you know, mind work and really gain that self-awareness and that self-perception. And sometimes, you know, especially that can be a big wake-up call for people to really be able to harness those skills for life.
Yeah, self-awareness is such a huge thing. In any problems that we have, you know, you're insecure and you're in a job where you kind of have to speak to people, or you're having sleep problems or marital problems, whatever, or you're not a good leader and you're, you know, really leading, you know, turning people off the way you, but it's the day where you realize when you come, if assuming you can accept the fact that, yeah, you can fix this, or, you know, you bring them aware of the things they're doing that are making it worse versus better. I mean, that's a huge, you're turning a big corner, because I think that a lot of the times is, just kind of not paying attention to what you're doing, you know, or how you're doing it, or, you know, whatever, why my wife kicks me in the back every night if I snore. It doesn't help my sleep. It doesn't help her sleep either, by the way. Then she wakes up, she kicks me. Now she's awake worrying about things, worrying about me snoring again. And I'm half asleep, delirious, you know, whatever. So, you know, it doesn't bode well for marriage. Marriage and sleep don't really go well together, I think.
Sure.
Right. Or at least sleeping in the same room in the same bed, I don't think goes well. That's not marriage that has to do with it. So separate rooms might be a good solution.
Occasionally. Mitch, I'm happy to speak about the snoring issues. It's there is a lot of non-invasive kind of things that can be done if you'd be interested.
Yes.
I'll just give me your wife's number. I'll call your wife. She'll sign you up. She'll pay
right.
me everything, you know, as long as
right.
I can. As long
well,
as
I told you about the friend who snores on his back, so his wife sewed a tennis ball into the back of his shirt.
It's a good idea.
That's less invasive, like that, right? You know?
Like I said, if Philips makes a $900 band that will vibrate and keep you from rolling on your back, well, here at the tennis ball, I mean, you know, $199.
Yeah, but either of those, though, don't really help you, right? They have to disrupt your sleep patterns. They help your spouse.
Right, of course. Well, come on. Yeah. Like, get your priorities right. You know, again.
I know. It's like
master bedroom. Who's in charge of me here?
Right. Imagine. Happy wife, happy life. That's you know, right? Do you want to be right or you want to be happy? Don't ever there choose right. It's not worth it. Okay. So let's talk about the things that people should be doing, you know, just in general, when they, you know, the kind of things you tell people, like in a webinar or whatever, because sure. I missed your webinar last night. I didn't know about it. I would have.
Oh, it was specifically a parenting webinar last night.
Oh, so, yeah. Okay. But again, my kids are older, so.
Right. Even for, as I explained, kids are little people too, you know, and the lessons that we're trying to, the first stage of us making our kids great sleepers is us becoming great sleepers and role models for that. Right. Yeah. The kids shouldn't think like, oh, mom and dad get to stay at party until 11, 12 o'clock at night iPhones or they're watching Netflix. Yeah. Right. And they're going to sleep. Like, no, they should understand that mom and dad are great sleepers. They have great sleep hygiene and they're role modeling those skills for the kids. You know, so like I said, like, if you're not a great sleeper, you're not going to be able to pass this off to your kids. You really have to be able to improve, you know, on your own and by yourself.
Yeah. Did you tell me last time we talked, it's like when the mask drops in the airplane, you got to put it on yourself because, right?
Seriously, right?
You can't take care of. Yeah. So, okay, good. So tell me the things that I should, that I'm doing wrong.
Right. So the basics, which, you know, like to me, they're obvious. They're out there, but so few people actually do them.
And well, I give the
example of dieting, you know, like, oh, how hard is it to lose weight? Like, I'm not a diet expert, but like, come on, you eat, you know, cut out the cookies, cake, candy, sugar, ice cream, you know, like heavy carbohydrates, you know, eat lots of, you know, salad and protein and exercise a lot. Like, you're going to lose weight. But if you've ever been on a diet, right, and if you think I'm skinny, I actually have been on a diet, and I know how challenging it can be. It's the hardest thing in the world to be able to do.
Oh, and my wife has a diet clinic, right? And is all you got to do is follow everything she tells you. They have they have some foods that are prepared, but also at night you eat your own food. So you're supposed to do this and do that and do that. If you follow it to a T, you can't do it forever. You will 100% lose weight. So people go, this is not working for me. I'm not losing weight. And then when she starts going over what they're doing, they'll be like, well, I mean, you know, when I have my tea at night, I have to have that cookie, just one cookie. She goes, no, that throws your whole metabolism off. Yes, the whole sugar thing. So you're right. Absolutely. If you do it and you stick to it and you can do it on your own, you didn't need a pro, you would definitely lose weight. Of course. That's where the body works.
Sure.
But that affects sleep a lot, right? Weight affects how you sleep a lot.
Right. Certainly apnea and insomnia as well, you know, and certainly, you know, your sugar intake, the amount of food you eat. You know, sometimes I have a client right now, he's like waking up at 2 a.m. and like noshing on all the junk in the cupboard, and like then he can't go back to sleep. And okay, this food is definitely related to health and sleep very much. And, you know, we really have to, you know, it's an essential ingredient into everything that we do. But just getting back to kind of the basics of sleep, you know, basics of sleep are, you want to be able to wind down at night, right? You want to be able to leave work at work, right? You want to be able to shut down your laptop, shut down your cell phone, make sure that those things are not being triggered. And that alone, like if people were able to like by 8 p.m. shut off their technology,
we would
have a sleep revolution.
I know. My wife watches TV and looks at Facebook at the same time. I turn my phone off. I'm not a surgeon. Like somebody's got to find me because they're dying in the hospital. I turn my phone off, it plugs, and I shut down. You have to decompress and disconnect. Now, I'm going to be very disappointed with your answer to this, but does decompressing include like a bourbon at night over ice? Because I don't do that every night, but I like it.
You should know my grandparents, my father's parents were like habitual, like religious drinkers in the evening. I'll tell you a funny story. When they came, my grandparents are from South Africa. Passed away a few years ago, blessed memory. But when they came to visit us from South Africa, my grandfather brought 2 bottles of Scotch bourbon in his hand luggage because he was afraid
that anymore, right.
Casey, I have nothing to drink.
Yeah, of course, there'd be nothing here. That's so funny.
Right. Yeah.
But alcohol and sleep can't go really well together, right?
Right. So look, it depends. Obviously, if you're having multiple drinks, you know, that definitely throws off your whole nervous system and, you know, everything that's firing. It could definitely have an effect on apnea. But again, you know, like one
glass. I snore more, I think, when I drink. If I had a glass of wine or bourbon,
Sure, but if my grandparents always would drink before dinner. It was like a 5 o'clock thing.
Well, that's better than they recover.
That's the time to do, you know, 7 o'clock, you want to have a glass of red wine. I think it can definitely help calm the nerves, right? And, it, you know, there are a lot of, you know, health benefits for those kind of things. Red wine, I think in general, is kind of the alcoholic drink of choice in terms of health. But even, you know, even some other things.
Especially as a Jewish person.
Right.
But you probably shouldn't drink all 4 glasses on Passover.
Not every night. You can preserve that Passover, right.
Exactly, right. Yeah, you recover. But definitely. I mean, you're drinking too much, obviously, because it depletes your body in other ways too. And then you don't sleep well. I mean, it's a mess. Yeah.
Sure. But if you're having, you know, a couple nights a week, you're having, you know, some drinks at, you know, 5, 6 o'clock, you know, 1 or 2 drinks.
Yeah, don't do it 10:45 and you go to bed at 11.
Right. And I spoke to a guy in LA. I mean, one of the most challenging cases of insomnia, he wasn't an alcoholic, but he needed between 4 and 8 glasses of alcohol in addition to multiple sleep medications just to get to sleep every night. right? So, you know, it's, look, a lot of it is habitual. A lot of it's, you know, just kind of things that we're feeding our biomechanism.
Right, but sure.
Reality is that that's definitely not a healthy sleep pattern. And, you know, you definitely want
to. Yeah, there were definitely times in my life when I was younger where I had a lot of stress and I would definitely needed a couple of shots to get to sleep. I definitely was an alcoholic. I wasn't like, oh my God, I got to drink, you know, whatever. But yeah, I just, in order to like, I don't know what it does. Like alcohol, like, I'm sure this isn't good, but it kind of cloud, it makes everything a little cloudy, a little less like, right? Takes it down. Everything that seems so intense doesn't seem too intense.
Sure.
Like why people take drugs when they shouldn't take drugs, right?
Right, right. And I think, look, I think what we're trying to do in my practice is substitute those kind of things with meditation.
Right. So you can still do that, still kind of dull things out without artificial interventions.
Right. Need no chemical insertion. And, and our bodies are capable of that, right? It's all in our mind. And when you're able to gain mastery over your mind and be able to control that racing mind, be able to subdue it, be able to turn it off when you need to be, you know, there are no side effects of meditation, you know, but besides a great night's sleep, you know?
So right.
Really that is
you're not going to hurt yourself meditating too much.
Right.
Yeah, thinking about. But you're right. I mean, people have this, their mind races. They start thinking about something. I remember where there are stressful times in my life, and maybe I just thought of this on my own, where I would be thinking about so many things that I would actually take a pad next to my bed if I couldn't sleep, and I'd just write the things down and then say, okay, well, they're on the pad. I don't need to think about them anymore, and I would go to sleep.
Sure.
Because you just got to put it aside.
Right, right. And I do journaling with a lot of people for different capacities. You know, some people we do journaling to help them get out of that like negative stigma about them, you know, being a bad sleeper because they've been told that for the last, you know, 10, 20 years. Right. So sometimes we'll do journaling on that. Sometimes the journaling is based upon, you know, realizing that they're whatever they did at work, even if, you know, the company is, you know, downsizing, that to lay off 25% of their employees, whatever it is, but to be able to release from that and be able to understand that they put their best effort in, right? They're trying their best. They're giving it their all. The results are ultimately not up to them. And to be able to have that disconnect, to be able to release that stress and not carry that with that into the bedroom, right? Is something that, you know, you're right. There's a very powerful psychological link with putting pen to paper and bringing that conscious thought, right, into our subconscious that, you know, with written word can be very powerful.
Yeah, well, you're just worried about things you got to do at work tomorrow and you're like, oh, I don't want to forget that. I want to forget. Well, if you just write it down, you can forget it.
Right.
It'll be there in the morning. You ever wake up in the middle of the night and then you see like an 800 number? So I used to do this. I would be exhausted. You know, I was, I don't know, my 30s or something. And you couldn't sleep. So you're living alone. So you turn on TV. What's on TV at night in those days? All the infomercials.
Right, of course.
So you get up in the morning and there's like an 800 number by your bed and you're like, oh my God, did I order something? That's why Ambien.
And if you order now, in the next 20 minutes.
Right, exactly. That's what it was. And you're so delirious. That's why Ambien's not good. Because I've heard all kinds of stories about people like, you know, sleepwalking and doing things with Ambien. Right. And they get up in the morning. They're like, what is this? Like, where did this come from? You know? And yeah, not good.
A friend of mine told me a story about a colleague in Los Angeles who's on Ambien. And again, there is a connection between people who are busy and, you know, I would say executive and doing a lot of high level functioning, a lot of Hollywood, a lot of top executives, very, very high prevalence of sleep issues, almost all of them. You're really the exception if you're not on one of these medications. And he told me, you know, very wealthy guy on Ambien, and he went Ambien driving, right? Which is a
real thing. Driving?
He went Ambien driving, right? And this is, you can Google it. I'm not making this stuff up. This stuff happens. And he got in his Bentley and he plowed into 26 cars on his block, right, before he crashed into a telephone pole and he got taken into custody, right, and was, you know, charged with a DUI, right, assuming that he was drunk, right, until the, you know, they did the blood test and realized it wasn't alcohol, it was Ambien, right, and it was totally subconscious, right.
But so he didn't have any recollection of the whole thing.
No, he woke up in prison.
That is really frightening.
Oh yeah, it's terribly frightening, right? And that's, you know, that's something that, you know, even if people are complacent, even if their sleeping pills are working and, you know, they're getting, you know, the right amount of sleep that they think they're doing, there are so many side effects. It's lowering your quality of sleep. It adds health risks. You have these, you know, sleepwalking and sleep driving and all sorts of, you know, crazy things that, you know, if, you know, I believe that we can empower people, the vast majority of people. There are cases that I do believe sleeping pills are legitimately needed if people are having chronic pain or, you know, there are certain things that, you know, just
under close supervision by a doctor, though.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, but practically there are, you know, medical drug dealers out there. I mean, I know who they are. My clients have them as as doctors, and they just call up and want an extra prescription, and they're dishing it out. And I think unfortunately that people just get so in the habit, and sometimes people aren't willing to put in the effort. And I think that's certainly something that's a key ingredient for our practices. We want people that are willing and ready to take responsibility, and if they're not, if they want an easy fix, that our solution's not for them. They are going to have to.
No, not everybody's going to take your listen to your advice. Look, that's been my experience, and I'm not saying this is true about all psychologists and all psychiatrists. Psychiatrists tend to prescribe medication. That's what they do. Psychologists will work with you and talk to you and give you therapy and work you out. And if medication is necessary, they're not going to even prescribe you medication. They're going to say you got to go. So it seems that that's just the way they do it. And if you go to a psychiatrist, you're going to come home with a bottle of pills. I mean, that's just, and it's not always good because we over-medicate, especially since, I don't know how far back it was in the 90s, where they started advertising medications on TV with all these ridiculous disclaimers. Like, who would even buy this thing if it, causes you, to have all kinds of anal problems and diarrhea and, death and dismemberment, all kinds of crazy things. But then we go to our doctor and be like, hey, I heard about this drug on TV called Ambien. I could sleep. Can I? Okay. So, yeah, you become a pusher. And that's, I think, it's part of our society, right? We're so, like, if the, obviously the pharmaceutical companies, they want to sell the Ambien. They don't want to say, oh, no, you don't need this. First, why don't you go out and meet with a professional and get your sleep in order? And then we'll see, maybe you probably don't even need Ambien. That wouldn't make them any money.
Right, right. 200 million monthly per
a month
prescriptions of Zorbinar.
A month. Right,
so it's that means like 200 million like monthly. So like I guess divide that over the year. But there were 200 million month like 30 day packs that were given out for sleeping pills. And that's it's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Is that in the United States or worldwide?
In the U.S. That was in the U.S. alone.
Yeah. So we only have what 350 million people in the country, so, and probably 100 million of them are kids. So everyone's taking sleep medication basically.
Well, again, those are monthly, not yearly. So it could be like if one person is taking that for 12 months.
People,
cut
right,
down the numbers,
yeah.
but it's wild.
It's an astronomical number either way.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's essentially what we're up against. The sleeping pill companies are not interested in the sleep coaches among us being successful.
Of course not. Right.
Right.
Of course
that's not how they make their bottom line.
Okay.
But I think it's time that the American public really, really wake up and really try to take back the night and really try to gain the sleep that they need naturally, because I believe that
a lot more
people are capable of it than are actually going to get.
Okay. So I'm sure you have some more tips or whatever. But so one of the tips was, learn to have a routine at night that disconnects and decompresses. Get off of the, if you're going to watch a Netflix something, great. It shouldn't be too intense, but I like watching the intense ones, but sometimes I can't sleep because of it. But watch something that's light, turn off your phone, get off of Facebook, LinkedIn, all that kind of stuff. It will still be there in the morning. I hate to tell people.
Right.
It's still there. You don't have to respond. I remember I have friends now all over the world. I mean, we met, you're in Chicago, I have friends in London. So my friend had a question for me, and I was putting the dogs to sleep. It's like 10:30, 11 o'clock. I'm closing down the kitchen and I leave my phone downstairs. I plug it in, I leave it off. I hadn't turned it off. I guess I forgot. Right. So I looked at it. There was a text from a friend in London. She had a question. So I figured, I'll send her the text. Then I don't have to worry about it tomorrow. She'll get it in the morning because it's already middle of the night in London. Right. She responds back to me. So it's 10 o'clock here. Right? She responds back to me. It must have been 3 o'clock in the morning. I responded back to her. I go, what are you doing? Like, why? Oh, yeah, I'm not a good sleeper. I'm not. She's, she probably needs to talk to you.
All right, send her my way.
Exactly.
Happy to chat. Right. So certainly, the technology to being able to be in control of that, you want again, for people who have or are sensitive sleepers or not great sleepers, you want to be able to have a consistent bedtime every night of the week. And especially when what I call when you're really trying to get your sleep schedule back on track, I call boot camp.
You got to be really diligent about it.
You want to be diligent, right? And you want to figure out how much sleep do I need to be functional? A little bit of sleep, that is actually a good thing. Because if again, let's just say you luxury sleep is 8 hours a night for you. And again, every individual is different. I always try to work with people on based on their own sleep patterns and their own sleep schedules. But let's say 8 hours is like luxury sleep. That's like vacation sleep for you.
Yeah.
So if you have a hard time falling asleep or staying asleep, if you're pushing yourself to get 8 hours of sleep, you actually might not fall asleep very easily because you're not exhausted.
Right. You're 3 hours in and then you only get 5 hours of sleep.
Right. Right. So usually when I'm trying to work with people, it's usually an hour less than what they think they might, they want, right? Okay. So like they say 8, I give them 7. If they say 7, I give them 6. Because you do want them to be a little, you want them to be tired at night, right? You want them to be a little exhausted, but obviously it's kind of like this Chinese finger trap, right? You know, sometimes in order, you need to get a little exhausted to get less exhausted at night in general and get your sleep schedule back.
Well, we do that with our kids, right? It's 10 o'clock, it's bedtime, but mommy, I'm not tired. So go lay in your room and stare at the ceiling, you know. And, you know, but the kids are more tired than they admit. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah. The kids, and that was something we spoke about last night, is to try to train your kids, because kids will fight sleep tooth and nail. It's not fun for them. They like things that are exciting.
Something's going on. I'm missing it. Right?
Right. So to be able to train the kid to develop that awareness and that sensitivity, what does it feel like to be tired? Because kids don't know. Again, we assume the kids understand everything. Like, no, like, you know, ask them how their body feels. Ask them how their eyes feel. Ask them how their mind feels. They feel relaxed, and help them go through that with those things. Because again, these are sleep skills that kids need and are not going to get unless we actually teach them.
Yeah. I mean, my kids have gotten to the point, they're older now. They're teenagers in college. They, you know, my wife would be like, did you put the kids to bed? I'm like, they're 15 years old. I don't need to put them to bed. Well, are they still up? We'd go upstairs. The doors are closed. Lights are off. They're asleep. It was 10:30, 11 o'clock, whatever. They're like, okay. You know, they sit in their rooms with their lights off. I should be like a shining example to you, but I don't think I am. But the kids, you know, like I'll go in my daughter's room. I'm like, are you going to sleep? Her lights are off already. She's got a little light on. Maybe she's FaceTime with a friend. She probably shouldn't be doing that, but you know what I mean? Like they got routines. They wind down. There's no question about it. They've put little lights in, you know, those little like strips you can get that are lights. They like to do that. So they do that in their room. And I think that even if they are on the computer, cause maybe they're doing work, especially in high school, right? They got more work to do. It like brings down the atmosphere. I think those are good. And you can do like little cool things in your kids' rooms with those light strips, and they're cheap and you can change the colors and things. I think that kind of, you know, the big bright LED lights are not like what you want at 11:30 at night. So I think it does. They all do this, and they did it on their own. They got these little lights and they lit up the underneath of their bed and around their, I'm like, what? I stick my head and my daughter's sitting there with her headphones on. She's on her laptop. She's probably working on something, whatever. And the whole room's like, it looks like a discotheque without a ball. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm working. I'm doing my work. I'm like, okay. And it's peaceful. There's no need to be set for. Aren't there also apps too that are calm you and give you meditation things and stuff like that, that people can download, probably even free stuff, right?
Right. I working with your phone.
Yeah, then you're on your phone. It's
kind of like a bittersweet pill, you know.
An oxymoron.
There are, right? There are apps that work with cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. There are apps for meditation and mindfulness. There are apps that, you know, help screen, put other apps to sleep. And like, there's all sorts of things. My attitude is that any time you're dealing with the phone is designed to be a highly addictive piece of
machine. They want you to look at it.
Right. Right. And so anytime you're like, oh, I'm going to go meditate. Oh, what's going on?
Something else pops up. That's the problem.
You're asking for problems. I think it's just like, you just need a clean break. I teach people how to meditate. And if you want to do that stuff from the day, great. If, you know, again, there's so much information out there. The one app that I actually am starting to work with people on, which I think is really a game changer for my for people to work with, are actually the sleep rings. There's this company called the Sleep On Ring or the Oura Ring, different models of different products. Okay. And they actually give you real-time reports of what's going on with your sleep. So if I have a client in whatever, you know, New York or in Florida or wherever, you know, they don't need to go into a sleep. I mean, obviously, again, I'm not downplaying sleep labs, great medical professionals, but you can get a lot of that information in 6 grams sitting on your ring every night of the week.
So it's a ring that like Bluetooth connects to your phone, and then the phone quietly collects.
It'll say your heart rate, your oxygen level, your turning rate, and it'll really be able to give you and to give me a real world experience. So the Fitbit has some functionality, right? The sleep rings are usually a little bit more focused on sleep.
Probably less disruptive too, because it's just a ring.
Right. You know, you don't have all those, you know, your Twitter messages coming on your phone.
Yeah, exactly. Your thing's in a vibe. Well, that's one of the problems with the phone, I guess. Unless you make sure you turn off all your notifications, things can pop up all the time. And don't kid yourself. Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Google, Apple, they want you to look at the phone. They benefit from you doing that. There's a whole psychology of that. So I read about that, right? They study how they can make you look at your phone more. That just disrupts your sleep more.
Right. Right,
100%. They're sleep bandits.
It's true.
They are. They're sleep bandits. They're stealing it from you. You don't even know it.
they want you to be as glued and as addicted to these things. And again, you have to understand the game. You can't go in naively and blindly. You understand? Okay, it's an amazing service. It's amazing products. I mean, you know, what Google does, I can ask Google a question and you instantly get an answer. It'll give me directions to anywhere I want to go and find me any service or product. But you have to know how to create boundaries. You know, just as with anything, you have to
know your boundaries. That's why you create boundaries for your kids so they're not so addicted when they get older. They can do that on their own.
Right.
But this COVID thing is definitely hasn't been good for that because all the parents are like, well, I mean, we're home all the time. I don't know what to do. How many crayons can they use and paint pictures and whatever? And the kids are, on the devices. So
Right. It definitely is a challenge. But, you know, certainly to be sensitive to these things at nighttime, that they need wind down time. For adults, you need a consistent bedtime, an hour for wind down, consistent bedtime to be able to wake up in the morning, right? And that's something that's like sometimes very tricky because especially people who suffer from insomnia, if they're not falling asleep till 2, 3, 4 in the morning, sometimes they're prone, especially, you know, under COVID where no one really has to be anywhere fast, right? If they have the ability to sleep until 9, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, right? And that totally throws off their sleep cycle. Well, they can't fall asleep till 4 o'clock the next morning anyways. And it's this vicious perpetual cycle. I mean, I dealt with a guy once in New York. This was him. He couldn't fall asleep till 4 in the morning. Right. And if he did not get 8 hours of sleep, he would have terrible migraine headaches the next day. So he would literally sleep from 4 o'clock in the morning till noon.
Right.
And everyone thought he was like lazy bum that like
half the day's gone.
Right. And he had this like serious issue. And it was like, you know, so that definitely took, you know,
well, his whole thing was shifted. So it was all
right.
Yeah. So look, my son's in college. All these kids are like this. Right. So he's up till 2 o'clock in the morning. And then he'll be sleeping at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, that's not normal. Like if you're tired and you fall asleep on the couch, that's one thing. But to actually get back into bed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon is not a healthy thing to do. It disrupts your whole, because then he can't sleep till late again. I mean, it's just, and we were all like this in college. You know, that's part of college, right? Or whatever. You don't get any sleep. I remember when I got to college, I think for the first 3 or 4 days, nobody slept. We were just up.
Oh, it was fun.
You're free. You're right. You're away from your parents. You're on your own. And it's craziness, but then, you know, it all goes down from there. All right. So I know I've taken up a lot of your time. So are there any parting words in terms of advice? We'll put in the show notes, you know, how to get in touch with you. And I think you said you have a book, right?
A couple of books and certainly a website. Good. LinkedIn, Facebook.
How to interact with you and how to find you, social media links, all that type of stuff. I told you, I want you to come on, speak to our networking group. It's about 15 or 20 of us. I think that would be a really interesting, good speech. I'm sure they all have sleep problems. So any like parting words before we sign off?
So I would really just encourage people to you know, knowledge is power, to be able to learn. There's so much information out there that, you know, so often most people I deal with, they're just living in the dark, right? They're living, you know, they're struggling with sleep issues. They're not even really aware of the effect that's having of why it's happening, you know, how it's happening, but to really, you know, to be able to, you know, access information, understand your own body, gain that self-awareness, and really kind of step up to the plate and ask yourself that tough question, am I sleeping properly? And if I'm not, what are the serious steps I need to do to be able to earn back the night and be able to, you know, regain clarity and mastery of my life? Because it's such an essential ingredient that really to encourage people to, you know, to step up to the plate and to really to be able to take responsibility in that manner.
Good advice. We'll end it on that note. And I appreciate you coming on. Thanks for joining me this morning.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.